Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, we're back and we're brown ambition. This is Tiffany.
What's up, y'all? It's Mandy.
And this is brown
ambition.
Oh, what's new with you, boo? You see what I did there?
I did. You rhymed all kinds of awesomeness. I can't believe it's only Tuesday. I don't know what's taking this week so long to get here because I need to go on my vacation. I need to get out of here.
Yes, I'm excited for mine too.
This is probably the least planning I've ever done for a trip in my life. Like literally until this past weekend, I only had a plane ticket booked and I was looking at my husband like, so who's planning this? Because I thought you were doing it. And he's like, well, I thought you were doing it. And anyway, I ended up just, we're not going anywhere super, you know, out of the ordinary. We're going to do the Pacific Northwest. And fortunately, one of my editors has gone and done the same, the similar kind of trip we're looking to do. So I literally just booked the same hotel she and her husband went to in the 90s. Hopefully it's still nice. She said it was nice. and then I'm just going to figure it out from there.
Okay. I mean, where's the Pacific? Where's that? Like what states are those?
Oh, so we're doing Washington and we might go to Vancouver.
Ooh, yeah. Pretty.
Yeah.
You know what? I love a good landscape. I'm a landscape chaser. Like I'm not someone who, when I like to go on vacation, I'm not someone who like seeks out cities. I mean, like I'll go to one, obviously, like I've been to Paris and stuff, but I prefer like a beautiful, just like, I just love nature when I travel. I like serenity. And so that sounds awesome. Tell me how it is. Cause maybe I'll go.
I've always wanted to go. You just see pictures of the Pacific Northwest. The whole region looks so stunning. And honestly, that's what I'm interested in. Like, I'm not interested in doing a lot of like sightseeing and walking around a city. I just want to like relax and be in nature. I think we're going to go on like a whale watching tour.
Oh, nice.
I just want to, I don't know. The B&B we're staying at is like on a cliff overlooking the ocean. And, you know, I like it. I like no plans, just relaxing. I mean, we'll see if I'm going stir crazy by day four, but I need to just get kind of grounded and centered again because it's been kind of a wacky year, a blessed year and a challenging year. But, you know, I just need like a reset.
Yeah, honestly, and that's like my kind of vacation, but that's not what I'm going on vacation. It's going to be crazy, but fun. I'm taking the team for the very, very first time on a vacation because the team is fairly young. I think like the longest some of the core team members have been there is like 2 years. I mean, we do have people, some folks that are longer, but as far as like collectively, it's about one and a half to 2 years old. So I said, you know, my business partner and I, Jabril, well, really it was his idea because he travels with his team all the time. And he was like, we should take the team. This is like last year. We should take the team on a trip. And this is when the team was about a year old. And I said, okay. He's like, you know, we should start setting aside money from our, you know, our monthly gross income toward the trip. So I think we set aside like 2% of our gross income in a savings account for the trip. And, you know, we kind of had like a budget already, like, you know, set aside. And I told him to pick a state. So no, we're not leaving the country. It was our first trip. And I said, no Alaska and no Hawaii. So something like, you know, that we could reasonably afford. So they picked Orlando. Florida, obviously. And so, yeah, I'm excited. So we've got a great itinerary. Obviously, we have to do Universal Studios. We're going to have a spa day. We're going to go to a comedy club. We're going to have like a, not a super fancy dinner, but like a nice dinner. We actually got an Airbnb that's a huge house with like a theater room.
Oh, nice. Have you guys like met in person before?
No, isn't that so crazy? I think I've met Sylvia and Logan, like Logan years ago. Logan is my content manager and Sylvia manages my social media, especially like the Facebook group. And so I met Sylvia at Essence Fest, not last year, but I think the year before. And Logan, I met her at a Dreamcatcher meeting, maybe like 2 or 3 years ago. But no, really, I have not met most of the team. Jabril is the only person I see, I wouldn't even say regularly, I would say maybe 3 or 4 times a year. I'm excited because it also marks like kind of like a next level for the company that we're even able to do this, you know?
Well, don't forget to take a look back. I mean, we were just talking about how it's the 10-year anniversary. I mean, anniversary is kind of a positive word, but the 10-year milestone of the financial crisis, you know, which took hold in 2008. And I mean, think about, we were talking about how like your career, my career kind of took off around the same time, or at least were instigated by the financial crisis. And I mean, don't just like look back at how far the Budgetese has come. Like look back at how far Mandy Inc. has come. And like how much you've grown, and just like be grateful for that. And yeah, there's a lot of challenges ahead, but I mean, celebrate. It seems like this trip is coming at a good time because you can like take a pause and celebrate what you have built, you know, and what you guys have built together, but what you started yourself 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, it's so crazy, right? 10 years. What a difference that like 10 years can make, obviously. Do you remember, like, I remember, so I'm turning 39 this year, and the year that I was turning 29 is when the school closed. And it was around this time, honestly, because school starts in New Jersey, like in September, early September. And we got a call basically saying, yeah, girl, don't come to work, you know, in 3 days. And I was like, oh, we're pushing back in opening day? That's weird. They're like, no, just ever. I'm like, wait, what? I was like, wait, what? And I remember feeling relieved and scared because honestly, I was so sick of tired of working in the classroom. I love the kids, but the administration was like just the worst. And so I was relieved. And I didn't realize it was like this big epidemic. I was like, oh, good. I get a break, a longer break. And then, you know, I'll go back and get me another teaching job. And then that didn't happen. And then things got worse and worse and worse. And then I got into like this really depressive funk because I was losing everything, all of my savings, my retirement account, my house. So in the beginning, though, I was actually excited before it all fell apart and then got back together again. What about you? What do you remember from 10 years ago?
Oh, I remember graduating and being so naive about how deep the recession was. I mean, I was a journalism student in 2009, you know, journalism school graduate in 2009. And we were all, it was like just baby little lambs to the slaughterhouse, just shipping us off to be ripped to shreds by the economy. Because, I mean, obviously, I remember that last year of journalism school where they were bringing in, you know, they bring in these, you know, established journalists from newspapers and national newspapers and local newspapers to come and talk to us and get us excited. And they were all just coming in haggard with like tattered shoes and like their glasses were broken. No, I'm kidding. But it felt like that. They were so depressed. And I remember being blindly optimistic in spite of everything. And I think about that time and I'm really grateful that I didn't adopt a recession mindset for my career. And I think that even though I did lose my first job when I got hired at a magazine and then I lost my job 3 months later in New York City, you know, that's my origin story for becoming a personal finance reporter. But even still, like when I lost my job, I remember calling a friend of mine and telling them and they were just horrified. And I was like, I'm gonna be fine. It's gonna be great. I got these unemployment benefits and but I think that's what happens when you come from, like for me, forget like the recession notwithstanding, like I had no option. I couldn't fail because there was no safety net. I didn't have family or friends to like support me. So for me, it was like, I'm going to make it because I have no other choice. And I think that, so in a lot of ways, the recession, it pushed me to not take my career for granted. It also pushed me to demand more from myself in terms of financial stability. And it made me
it made me more serious about making sure when I started to make it that I was not just going to make it for the time being or just get a job for now, but I was going to like build a career that could sustain me when the next layoff comes. Like, you know, it broke my own, I don't know if people have, naivete, you know, when you mm-hmm. work for a company, oh, I'm going to work here forever. They love me and they're, you know, I'm loyal to this company. It really helped me understand, oh, this is business. And yes. As long as I'm working for someone else, and I still am to this day working for a company, any day they could be like, oh, you know, your service is no longer needed. Don't come to work in 3 days. And because of that, I feel like it's helped me prepare, you know, have a realistic idea of what work is and what it isn't, and prepare for, make sure that I'm prepared so that if, you know, if that were to happen again, I'm financially secure, but I'm also like mentally secure. You know, it's not like my, yes. it's not like my identity is tied up in my job. And that I have enough skills that I can go and get a job somewhere else after that. That was a long-winded answer, but
no, it was good because honestly, it totally transformed me because I am not by nature at that age. I was not a risk taker. Well, not really. I mean, but it forced me to look at, because if you can lose a job, a teaching job, I'm like, is there any job more secure than a teaching job? Like, you know what I mean? Like, so what it did was like, whoa. I did what I call the brown girl, good girl checklist. Check, go to school. Yes. Check, get your degree. Yes. Check, like, you know, buy your home, save your money. Like, I was doing all the good girl things.
Got your master's.
Exactly. Like, and so like, you know, get your first property. I was like 26. I got a condo. So I had marry your college boyfriend. So I was like dating like my college boyfriend for, I don't know, we were dating by then 6 years, I guess. And so everything was like, okay, yes, I have the good girl checklist. Literally everything was going swimmingly. And then all of a sudden it was like, wait, what? Everything fell apart. And I didn't even, I'm not going to lie, it took me like a year and a half, almost 2 years to even get back to, I don't know if it was depression or what, but I couldn't believe it because I was like, I couldn't wrap my mind around, but I kept replaying like, but I did everything. I did everything like, right. You know, like I got good grades. I got my degrees. I don't understand. Like I was actually a really good teacher. Like I was getting accolades as a teacher and being recognized by the city, and I was like a model classroom, and like the kids were really, I'm like, I don't understand, like I don't, what does this mean? Because I had already used all the tools that I knew for success, so it was scary because it was like, I don't have any other tools, I've used them all and it didn't work, so what do you do but lay in the bed and look at the ceiling like, I don't know what to do in my life. And then I don't know, like it was my best friend Linda that helped break me out of my funk. And then I realized that, you know, I was 30 by then, and I kind of didn't want to, you know, live this sucky life. And so as I was digging, you know what helped a lot? As I was digging my way out, I saw that my friends were also struggling, and I was able to take my mind off of me and really start to be like, well, Tiffany, at least you know how to budget, because that's the one thing, you know, I got from home. At least you know how to save. And so as I was helping myself, I was like, well, hey, girl, let come to the house, or I'll come to your house and I'll help you. So that helped. That I switched from the woe is me, Tiffany, to, well, you've got some basic skills that you can help your friends with, Tiffany. So let's, in the meantime, figuring what you want to do, your unemployment, at least help your friends out. And then helping my friends out turned into helping my community out. And then that turned into, can this be a business? So I'm grateful for those times, but it was traumatic. I still suffer from that trauma. Like, honestly, I'm hoping Helen can help me with, like, your, our financial advisor.
Shared custody.
Right? Superman and I have our first meeting with her on October 4th, so I'm excited. But, yeah, because I'm still suffering from some of the trauma of it. But, yeah, that was... Ooh, those were some really weird times, you know?
And I wonder if all these stories, you know, all these stories about, I mean, forget about the president, but you can't argue with the fact that on paper, the economy is doing extraordinarily well. You know, unemployment is at record lows. The stock market, the bull market continues. It has been a bull market for, I think, a record amount of time now. But at the other hand, on the other hand, you can't deny the reality. I mean, we get the questions from our listeners, the fact that they're still struggling with consumer debt, student loan debt. You know, how many questions do we get around that? How many questions about people underwater on their auto loan? So it's like, I feel like certainly the uber rich and the wealthy and a select group of people are definitely benefiting from the stronger economy, but it changed our country in ways that are irreversible, or at least, you know, are going to be really hard to reverse. Like the number of people who lost their homes and became permanent renters, you know, on the one hand, that's negative because you've lost, you know, you've taken away for people to build wealth through property. On the other hand, you've created this, like, this generation of landlords, you know, like buying up cheap homes and then flipping, mm-hmm. you know, and then renting them to renters. You hear people talk about, oh, it's a great time to invest in property because so many, you know, there's so many renters and housing is low. And it's just fascinating to me to look at the micro ways that, you know, the past 10 years have impacted people in their way of life. And I definitely don't think it's been an even recovery. I really would love to hear from our listeners if you guys have, like, if you guys want to share your recession story. I mean, tweet us, you know, tweet us at the BA podcast on Twitter, or shoot us an email at brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com. I want to share some of y'all's stories, how the recession's impacted you or how you're feeling 10 years after the recession.
All right, BA fam, y'all know when it comes to financial advice, you have to trust your source. That's why you listen to Brown Ambition, right? And when I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. I've been a longtime fan of NerdWallet. In fact, I almost work there a couple of times because when it comes to financial experts and writing, they really know how to give you the best reviews of financial products. I honestly wouldn't sign up for a credit card today if I hadn't looked at a review on a site like NerdWallet myself. And honestly, if y'all haven't learned about NerdWallet, you're missing out. And with their help, what could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms of each credit card issuer apply.
Shall we brown boost, brown break?
Yes, brown boost, brown break, please. So my brown break, I guess it's almost like a boost break. So I just found out today, and I think it just was announced today, that Michael Kors bought Versace. And I guess it's a boost for, you know, Michael Kors being able to buy Versace. But the break is that there's, like, you know, and I participated just because it was kind of funny, that there's like this snobbery in, like, oh, Michael Kors. Like, you know, that trash brand buying Versace. But I think you mentioned something earlier, Mandy.
When did he become trashy?
You know, when regular everyday people could afford him. Is
someone
that crazy?
Tell my mother-in-law.
No, I'm not going to lie. So I just today, Superman, we were cleaning out the closet. And like one of the first gifts he ever gave me 4 years ago was this Michael Kors bag. Ooh. With the MK all over it. And I remember when he brought it home. Because first of all, I'm not a label person anyway, let alone a label person where you could read it. And so he's like, "Ooh, my cousin helped me pick it out," and he spent like $300-$400 on that bag. And I mean, I think I wore it for a good month just to be like, "Hey, I'm using it." But I remember thinking, like, he's like, if I could go back and speak to myself back then, I'd be like, "Don't do it. Don't."
He's come a long way.
Yes.
He's not that boy anymore.
I know. So yes. And the snobbery of business, and that Michael Kors is a good business. Regardless, somebody's buying Michael Kors, you know? So people turn their nose up, and I'm like, you know.
Man. I'm sitting here with blue hands because my $17 Old Navy jeggings are cheap AF, and they bleed all over the place. But you know what? They're comfy, and they're cheap.
And that's, well, what about you? What's your brown break or boost?
That's my style. So my boost is going to be for, I wanted to talk about what's happening with our Supreme Court nominee situation right now. So the allegations around Brett Kavanaugh obviously have been in the news, and I feel like this is a real proof for me that the Me Too movement was not just a moment and that it's really having ripple effects. Because I really don't think we would have paused and taken this woman seriously, these accusations, if it hadn't been for what's been happening over the past year. And it's just fascinating to me. And I was telling you a little bit before when we were talking, like, I challenge myself to like really pick apart my own reaction when I hear new allegations against prominent men in power. And when I heard the allegation against Kavanaugh, and I'm trying to like pull my politics out of it, obviously conservative justice, he, you know, his confirmation could have extreme ripple effects on our reproductive rights as women. And I mean, countless other decisions around, you know, legal decisions could be determined when we have a majority conservative Supreme Court. So there's a lot at stake here. Yeah. But I'm trying to remove my politics out of it. And I have found myself, I think before, I've definitely been on the, oh, well, how do we know it's true? It's he said, she said. And I'm more ready to believe people who speak out in this way because, and I think part of that is like having conversations with people that I know who have been traumatized by sexual assault in the past, and are finally speaking up about it. And I don't think people understand. And I personally, you know, I can understand. I mean, I can listen to people tell me how it is, but I personally don't understand because I haven't been sexually assaulted. And, you know, but I can see how difficult it is for them to talk about it, even in small circles. So imagine what it takes for someone to put their name on a story like this, she didn't have to put her name on this story at all. She did it, you know, she made a choice to, and that takes guts. That is brave. That is courageous. And I think it's, you can't ignore it when, and it's not just, you don't have to put your name on it, but I think that the fact that someone's speaking up and they're willing to put their name on it, you know, they shouldn't necessarily have to, but that to me is enough for me to say, you know, I believe what she's saying, and, or at least I believe that we need to listen, and investigate and take a step back and do some work to find out what the truth is. And that's just interesting. And so it's for me, it's a good sign, the conversations that we're having around Kavanaugh. Because I think 10 years ago, you know, whatever, this would have been buried.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll see, because, you know, Anita Hill, you know, they didn't do right by her when she, you know, she stepped forward to talk about Clarence Thomas. And so.
Yeah, they ripped her apart.
Yeah. And so it's just crazy. Like, I don't think men get how hard it can be to be a woman. I was reading somewhere that a woman, she posted, she was saying like a conversation she had with a young guy at her office. And she said something like, he said something like, man, I don't even want kids though. If I was 18, 19 years old, I would go get my tubes tied and live my life. And she was like, yeah, you can't do that. I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, no, you have to be at least 25, married, and have at least one kid before you get your tubes tied. And he was like, wait, what? Why do I have to ask somebody I could get a vasectomy right now if I wanted to. She's like, exactly. And I think that a lot of men don't realize like what it's like to have like your body, your story, and it's being just like it's just not treated the same. And there's so much happening. And I know it could be like this flood, the Me Too movement. Like, I actually know Tarana Burke. She's awesome, by the way. And like, it could just be a lot. And I've seen men be like, oh boy, here we go again. But I'm like, you.
And again, imagine, and right? Again, and again. Get used to the new normal.
Because it's like, well, I mean, it wouldn't be here we go again if it wasn't here we go again. And so, yeah, it's just a shame. And I mean, I'm just very curious to see how this is going to all play out. I'm not gonna lie, I'm not all super hopeful, but you never know. You know, I guess we'll see. But I definitely hope that with all of these things coming to light, and people really getting punishment. I know we said we're gonna talk about Bill Cosby, and we don't have to, but like with like things like that coming up, that more and more of these men are gonna think once, twice, thrice before, you know, making a move that's unwarranted and unwanted toward women.
They felt real safe, you know, they felt real secure making those kinds of moves, you know, because that was the normal. Yeah. That was the normal that existed. I don't think a person, I'd like to think that a predator like Bill Cosby couldn't have preyed on so many women in today's age, you know. And it's a damn shame that it took decades and, I mean, dozens of women, right, for Bill Cosby, like dozens. It shouldn't have to be dozens, you know. But I feel like there is a shift in, at least for me, it's like the one comfort I have after the election, which I can't believe was almost 2 years ago, is like more women are running for office. And the same thing, you saw the same thing happen after Anita Hill. You know, there was the Anita Hill effect where all these women started running for office. A lot of women in Congress now ran because of Anita Hill, you know, or what was happening around that hearing. They were motivated to, you know, get a place of power. And, you know, we made a little bit of progress, but there's still so much work to do. And I guess the positive thing, the brown boost here is that so many people, I think both our generations, all generations of women, are standing up and saying this is not going to be our normal, and we are going to do whatever we can to make sure it doesn't become the normal.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.